This is live special coverage from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon. We will bring you to the Johnson Space Center in Houston, Texas, where a memorial service for the lost crew of the Columbia Space Shuttle is scheduled to begin in just a few minutes. The service is taking place today outside on a lawn at the Johnson Space Center. President Bush is expected to speak, as will Sean O'Keefe, the head of the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, and Kent Rominger, chief of the Astronaut Corps. Mr. Rominger is a former astronaut who's been on five missions into space, and he flew twice on Columbia. Today's gathering will honor the seven men and women aboard Columbia's final mission, STS-107. The shuttle commander, Air Force Colonel Rick Husband, shuttle pilot and Navy commander Willie McCool, mission specialist and Navy captain David Brown, mission specialist Kalpana Chawla, payload specialist and Air Force Lieutenant Colonel Michael Anderson, mission specialist and Navy commander Laurel Clark, and payload specialist and a colonel in the Israeli Air Force, Ilan Ramon. Of course, we're also saying farewell today to the Columbia shuttle itself, the vessel that for so long served America's space program. At NASA, all endeavors are identified first and foremost by a number, and Columbia began its flying life simply as OV-102. But invariably, these crafts take on a life and identity that expresses something of America's emotional and human yearnings, ingenuity, and experience. The Columbia was born of every region of the United States. Its name came from a sloop out of Boston that was the first American ship to circumnavigate the world. It was built out in Palmdale, California, and of course it lifted off from Florida's Kennedy Space Center. Americans from California to Texas saw it streak over the sky early Saturday, trying to return safely home. It's partly cloudy in Houston today. Temperatures are in the 50s. There is a silence after that hymn as guests are filing in. I'm going to turn to Dan Shore, who joins me now in the studio. Dan, thanks for being with us.
Oh, glad to be here, Scott. Although I'd be gladder to be here on some other kind of occasion, I guess. You know, this nation is getting very good at solemn occasions, alas. 40 years, almost, since President Kennedy was killed, and somehow we managed to orchestrate our grief very well these days. I'm reminded now of the occasion, so much like this occasion, when President Reagan appeared in 1986, also at the Johnson Space Center, also because they had lost a spaceship, then the Challenger. And I just want to quote now from one line from what he said. "Sometimes," said President Reagan, "when we reach for the stars, we fall short," he said. "But we must pick ourselves up again and press on despite the pain." That kind of goes for now, too, doesn't it?
Yeah. The number of people who have assembled outside in Houston today, according to news agency reports, are between 10 and 15,000. Of course, President and Mrs. Bush are there. John Glenn, an elder statesman of the effort to explore outer space, and his wife Annie Glenn are there. We want to go now to NPR's Ira Flato, who joins us from our studios in New York. Ira, thank you for being with us.
I reflect the moment of the day and what Dan said. And I think on back on knowing so many of these astronauts and the added tragedy that so many of we journalists know them so well, know them their achievements. And the public gets to know them after they're passed away, unfortunately. And we learn about what wonderful people they were.
Yeah. The a statement has been issued, by the way, of the families of those who were lost aboard Columbia. And in the moments we have before the service begins, I'd like to read from some phrases from it. The families of the astronauts who were lost aboard Columbia say, "On January 16th, we saw our loved ones launch into a brilliant cloud-free sky. Their hearts were full of enthusiasm, pride in country, faith in their God, and a willingness to accept risk in the pursuit of knowledge, knowledge that might improve the quality of life for all mankind. Although we grieve deeply, as do the families of Apollo 1 and Challenger before us, the bold exploration of space must go on. Once the root cause of this tragedy is found and corrected, the legacy of Columbia must carry on for the benefit of our children and yours." And in fact, we see a number of children who were scattered throughout the crowd in Houston. They're flowers that have been laid down at a kind of makeshift memorial, balloons, messages of condolence, messages of hope. As the crowd outside, as we say, said to number between 10 and 15,000, waits in respectful silence for the memorial service to begin. Dan Shore, as you note, we are getting at least more practiced at this kind of ceremony in the United States. This is not a country like some European republics where this is kind of set out in a formal way. Every culture, in a sense, puts together its own ritual of grieving.
That's right. And America didn't have to do that very much, having been such an optimistic nation. And then this is not only that we've lost spaceships, it is also mixed somewhere in this is 9/11, mixed somewhere in this is a recession. It's an age and a time of anxiety. But I better stop talking because the president is approaching.
President of the United States and Mrs. Bush are approaching to applause from the crowd, being led forward to their seats by a naval aide. And there is a processional plane in the background. You hear the applause swelling as the President and Mrs. Bush make their way into the front rows of the seats that have been arranged in Houston. And of course, this is a ceremony, Dan, that will have a religious element, a military element, because the military, of course, has its own rituals of grief and loss. And it will seek to evoke the spirit of a nation that looked up into the skies unexpectedly and amazingly on Saturday.
It actually became almost three nations because there was an Israeli astronaut making his first trip who took kosher food with him on board. There was an Indian American who was a symbol for the people of India. So it's more than a national occasion. It becomes a world occasion.
I will take the liberty of saying that that the President of the United States seems to be struggling with his emotions a bit on his face right now.
Oh, God.
families of the astronauts lost aboard Columbia have been filing into their seats as this hymn, which I believe is God of Our Fathers, has been sung by a naval chorus. Scott Simon and Dan Shore and Ira Flato up in New York. We are bringing you NPR's live special coverage of the memorial service at the Johnson Space Center in Houston for the Columbia astronauts. President and Mrs. Bush are in attendance. We have certainly also seen John Glenn, the elder statesman of the U.S. space program, in attendance with his wife, former Senator Glenn, in attendance with his wife, Annie Glenn. Cabinet officers, and mostly, however, it's a service for the families and the community in Houston.
The Hebrew poet Bialik wrote, Achrei moti sifdu kachali, haya ish uru'u einenu od. Kodam zmano meta ish hazeh, v'shirat chayav be'emtza nifsaka.
Rabbi Harold Robinson of the U.S. Navy.
Od mizmor echad hayalo, v'ine avad hamizmor. La'at. After my death, mourn me thus. There was a man, and see, he is no more. Before his time, his life was ended, and the melody of their lives were broken in its midst. Oh, they had one more melody, and now that melody is lost. Forever. Eternal God, when we view our little planet from out in space, we learn the unity of all humanity here on Earth. We are one as you are one. Did you not teach us this from the very beginning? As we read, and God created humanity in God's own image. Still the ancient psalmist asked and prayed, Eternal God, what are we that you have regard for us? What are we that you are mindful of us? We are like a breath, our days are as a passing shadow. We come and go like grass, which in the morning shoots up renewed, and in the evening fades and withers. You cause us to revert to dust, saying, Return, O mortal creatures. Would that we were wise, that we would understand whither we are going. For when we die, we carry nothing away. Our glory does not accompany us. Mark the wholehearted. Behold the upright, for their end is peace. O God, you redeem the souls of all your servants, and none of those who trust in you shall ever be forsaken. Adonai ma'adam v'tedehu, ben enosh v'techashveh, adam lehevel dama, yamav ketzel over. V'boker yatzitz v'chalaf le'erev yimolel v'yavesh. Shemor tam ure'e yeshar ki acharit le'ish shalom. Poderanai nefesh avadav lo yashmu kol achoschim bo. Nin hashamayim kol ha'eneshut am Echad. Hamakom yenachem etchem, et am Yisrael, et kulanu, betoch shar, avlei tzion virushalayim. May the abode of all creation grant consolation to all who mourn, comfort to all the bereaved. Even here, O God, you are the fountain from which our healing flows. Even now, the stricken look to you for strength. For well we know, all creation is the dwelling place of your great love, and the fullness of all things is your glory. We're invited to join in singing together, God of our fathers.
Navy Chaplain Rabbi Harold Robinson. Navy chorus singing the hymn God of Our Fathers, which of course takes its name from Chronicles, chapter 20, verse 6.
On behalf of NASA, thank you all for your participation in this heartfelt tribute.
This is Sean O'Keefe, NASA's Chief Administrator.
The intrepid crew of the Space Shuttle Columbia. Throughout our proud NASA family, the bond between those who venture into space, our outstanding Astronaut Corps, and those who make spaceflight possible, our dedicated scientists, engineers, safety, and support personnel, this bond is incredibly strong. And today, our grief is overwhelming. Our duty now is to provide comfort to the brave families of the Columbia crew, the families who take so much pride in their loved ones' remarkable accomplishments. We also have the tremendous duty to honor the legacy of those fallen heroes by finding out what caused the loss of the Columbia and its crew. correct what problems we find, and to make sure that this never happens again. We owe this to you, the families, and to the American people. With an uncompromising commitment to safety, we will keep this solemn pledge. As we continue to pursue our mission goals of understanding and protecting our home planet, exploring the universe and searching for life, and inspiring the next generation of explorers, we hope our unceasing efforts will provide a fitting tribute to the Columbia 7. This year, our centennial flight inspires us to marvel at how far we've come from the daring achievements of two bicycle makers from Ohio, Orville and Wilbur Wright, and their achievements at Kitty Hawk, North Carolina. And the astronauts' ambitious research and exploration activities honored the dreams of explorers and inventors everywhere. Nearly 3 weeks ago, we saw our seven astronauts head into space with smiles on their face, and as their families have so eloquently said, with hearts full of enthusiasm, pride in country, faith in their God, and a willingness to accept risk in pursuit of knowledge. Knowledge that might improve the quality of life for all mankind. Once in space, they tirelessly worked on research aimed at fighting cancer, improving crop yields, developing fire suppression techniques, building earthquake-resistant buildings, and understanding the effects of dust storms on the weather. Students from all around the world, our generation next of those explorers, also contributed many of the science experience that were so important to the crew. On the morning of Columbia's flight, I heard students from Fowler High School in Syracuse, New York, proudly describe their ant colony experiment, an experiment that the Columbia's crew delighted in observing. This was one of 11 different experiments that were put together by students and kids. And we'll never know the results of some of Columbia's ambitious research agenda. But be assured, however, that future astronauts will orbit new experiments addressing the fascinating research questions that motivated this mission. And we pledge that the students, like those from Fowler High School, will have similar opportunities to join our astronaut crews in these important learning adventures. As Commander Rick Husband said, I think one of the legacies of NASA is that you always push forward. And STS-107 is doing that on the science side, pushing human science knowledge forward. This was the work that gave the Columbia crew such unbridled joy. This was their lasting gift to us all. Last Wednesday, as the Columbia crew was circling the globe, Kolpnut took a rest from her duties to take in the stunning view of the Earth at sunset, a view that only a select group of space explorers have been privileged to witness. Now, she told us from the flight desk that the entire Earth and sky could be seen reflected in the retina of her eye. She called her crewmates to come over to see this amazing sight. It is this image, the image of Columbia's crew joyfully joining Kolpnut to see our beautiful planet reflected in their friend's eye, that we will remember and treasure forever. And for these, and for them, and their memories, we will persevere.
NASA's Administrator Sean O'Keefe. We will now hear from Kent Rominger, Chief of the Astronaut Corps, who himself flew aboard Columbia twice.
We lost seven family members. Coping with our tragic loss is going to be extremely difficult. But remembering the unique qualities of each and sharing our special memories will help us heal. That's what I'd like to do today. Every shuttle crew forms into a family as they go through their months, and in this case of STS-107, years of training. But the STS-107 crew grew particularly close. They were a generous and caring bunch with a great sense of humor. As a matter of fact, they would bake birthday cakes for their training instructors. They traveled around with a mascot, a small toy hamster that sang the Kung Fu fighting song. They referred to the crew secretary as the great and powerful Roz. And they convinced her if she would keep candy on her desk, she would see a lot more of them. At the astronaut Christmas party this last December, the STS-107 crew and spouses were there in rare form. They had paper crowns, they were sporting STS-107 tattoos, and truly were the life of the party. As a matter of fact, anybody that passed within 10 feet of their table was encouraged, if not physically helped, into a chair and immediately branded with an STS-107 tattoo. And at the time, I didn't openly thank them for the tattoo square in the middle of my forehead, but I was very proud to be labeled as one of them. This diverse crew functioned flawlessly together, but each individual brought much more than just technical ability to that crew. Let me go on. Elon, he was the perfectly poised fighter pilot with a sparkle in his eyes. His instructors remember a moment prior to getting in his launch and entry suit where he was standing there in dark blue thermal underwear with a Santa Claus cap and quipped, "Life is not a rehearsal." He was also extremely caring. From orbit, he sent an email encouraging management, me and the other folks, to immediately reassign this crew that he could not imagine being part of or flying with any crew that was more deserving, more talented, and more capable. Laurel, the dedicated professional with a wide variety of talents. She was also the queen of STS-107 paraphernalia. She had a different pastel crew shirt for each day of the week, complemented with crew patches and matching crew earrings. She had a perpetual smile and would never send an email or phone if she could find you in person. She also was very caring and when away on vacation, would make a point to phone her crewmates and her crew secretary. But no matter how hectic the day, she inspired us with her ability to always reserve time and energy for her family. Mike, he was a perfect choice for the payload commander. Organized, thorough, someone you could absolutely count on, a gifted leader. He was the quiet type, unless you asked him about his family or his Porsche. And perhaps because he was quiet, we all loved to see him laugh. And when he laughed, we laughed with him even harder. And he knew just when to drop a great punchline. Kalpna, or Casey to her friends, was admired personally for her extraordinary kindness and technically for her strive for perfection. She had a terrific sense of humor and loved flying small airplanes with her husband and loved flying in space. Flying was her passion. She would often remind her crew, as her training flow would be delayed and become extended, she would say, "Man, you are training to fly in space. What more could you want?" Smiling Dave, or Doc, to his friends, quiet and observant, with piercing blue eyes. He was the bachelor of the group, and as such, was in constant search for food. Doc also loved cameras and always had a camera with him. Riding out to the pad, I've never seen anybody as intense at making sure he filmed every bit of what was going on with his crew as Doc. Usually, when he was filming folks, he would tell them, "Just act like a little brown squirrel." He also had a keen sense of humor, and after one demanding simulator run, turned to KC and asked, "May I borrow your brain?" This comment illustrates his humility because it was well known in the astronaut office that he was extremely capable. Willie was incredibly humble with exceptional talents. He was especially gifted at quickly learning and mastering technical information, but was also known for his tremendous consideration for others. He enjoyed surprising people with flowers and Hawaiian leis. Willie also was uncharacteristically punctual for an astronaut. And his training team was dismayed that over the several years of training, he was only late for one event, a record I'm sure never to be broken, especially by an astronaut. Rick was a terrific human being and a great leader. He was my pilot on his first flight. I grew to really appreciate all of his talents, his gifts, and laugh at all of his Amarillo sayings. His favorite saying, and I can hear him saying it right now, was, "You know, I feel more now like I did than when I first got here." And when we were training, it took me 6 months to learn how to say that. And as a matter of fact, Rick emailed me 6 days ago from orbit, and that was in the subject line, that saying. He was a naturally gifted pilot. I was envious, even though I was his more experienced commander, and an outstanding leader. He molded seven individuals from different parts of the world with diverse backgrounds, various religious beliefs, into an incredibly tight-knit and productive family. The night before launch, Rick gathered his crew and spouses to discuss the final details of the mission. He finished by reciting the following passage from the Bible, Book of Joshua, from memory. "Be strong and courageous, because you will lead these people to inherit the land I swore to their forefathers to give them. Be strong and very courageous. Be careful to obey all the laws my servant Moses gave you. Do not turn from it to the right or to the left, that you may be successful wherever you go. Do not let this book of the law depart from your mouth. Meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to do everything written in it. Then you will be prosperous and successful. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be terrified. Do not be discouraged. For the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. Rick, Willie, Mike, Casey, Laurel, Dave, and Alon, I know you're listening. Please know you are in our hearts, and we will always smile when we think of you."
Kent Rominger, Navy captain, the chief of the astronaut office, with a very personal recollection of the seven astronauts lost aboard Columbia. Clearly friends, and cherished friends. We're now going to hear what's sometimes called the Navy hymn, "Eternal Father."
Thank you.
the sea chanters with the Navy hymn, Eternal Father. Those last lines, O hear us when we cry to thee for those in peril on the sea, remind us of President Kennedy's observation that space is the sea on which we must sail.
Their mission was almost complete, and we lost them so close to home. The men and women of the Columbia had journeyed more than 6 million miles and were minutes away from arrival and reunion. The loss was sudden and terrible, and for their families, the grief is heavy. Our nation shares in your sorrow and in your pride. And today we remember not only one moment of tragedy, but 7 lives of great purpose and achievement. To leave behind earth and air and gravity is an ancient dream of humanity. For these 7, it was a dream fulfilled. Each of these astronauts had the daring and discipline required of their calling. Each of them knew that great endeavors are inseparable from great risks. And each of them accepted those risks willingly, even joyfully, in the cause of discovery. Rick Husband was a boy of 4 when he first thought of being an astronaut. As a man, and having become an astronaut, he found it was even more important to love his family and serve his Lord. One of Rick's favorite hymns was How Great Thou Art, which offers these words of praise. I see the stars, I hear the mighty thunder, thy power throughout the universe displayed. David Brown was first drawn to the stars as a little boy with a telescope in his backyard. He admired astronauts, but as he said, I thought they were movie stars. I thought I was kind of a normal kid. David grew up to be a physician, an aviator who could land on the deck of a carrier in the middle of the night, and a shuttle astronaut. His brother asked him several weeks ago what would happen if something went wrong on their mission. David replied, "This program will go on." Michael Anderson always wanted to fly planes and rose to the rank of lieutenant colonel in the Air Force. Along the way, he became a role model, especially for his 2 daughters and for the many children he spoke to in schools. He said to them, "Whatever you want to be in life, you're training for it now." He also told his minister, "If this thing doesn't come out right, don't worry about me. I'm just going on higher." Laurel Salton Clark was a physician and a flight surgeon who loved adventure, loved her work, loved her husband and her son. A friend who heard Laurel speaking to Mission Control said, "There was a smile in her voice." Laurel conducted some of the experiments as Columbia orbited the Earth and described seeing new life emerge from a tiny cocoon. Life, she said, continues in a lot of places, and life is a magical thing. None of our astronauts traveled a longer path to space than Kalpana Chawla. She left India as a student, but she would see the nation of her birth, all of it, from hundreds of miles above. When the sad news reached her hometown, an administrator at her high school recalled, She always said she wanted to reach the stars. She went there and beyond. Kulpna's native country mourns her today, and so does her adopted land. Elon Ramon also flew above his home, the land of Israel. He said, the quiet that envelops space makes the beauty even more powerful. And I only hope that the quiet can one day spread to my country. Elon was a patriot, the devoted son of a Holocaust survivor, served his country in two wars. Elon said his wife Rona left us at his peak moment, in his favorite place, with people he loved. The Columbia's pilot was Commander Willie McCool, whom friends knew as the most steady and dependable of men. In Lubbock today, they're thinking back to the Eagle Scout, who became a distinguished naval officer and a fearless test pilot. One friend remembers Willie this way. He was blessed, and we were blessed to know him. Our whole nation was blessed to have such men and women serving in our space program. Their loss is deeply felt, especially in this place, where so many of you called them friends. The people of NASA are being tested once again. In your grief, you are responding as your friends would have wished, with focus, professionalism, and unbroken faith in the mission of this agency. Captain Brown was correct. America's space program will go on. This cause of exploration and discovery is not an option we choose. It is a desire written in the human heart. We are that part of creation which seeks to understand all creation. We find the best among us, send them forth into unmapped darkness, and pray they will return. They go in peace for all mankind, and all mankind is in their debt. Yet some explorers do not return, and the law settles unfairly on a few. The families here today shared in the courage of those they loved. But now they must face life and grief without them. The sorrow is lonely, but you are not alone. In time, you will find comfort and the grace to see you through. And in God's own time, we can pray that the day of your reunion will come. And to the children who miss your mom or dad so much today, you need to know they love you, and that love will always be with you. They were proud of you, and you can be proud of them for the rest of your life. The final days of their own lives were spent looking down upon this earth. And now on every continent, in every land they could see, the names of these astronauts are known and remembered. They will always have an honored place in the memory of this country. And today, I offer the respect and gratitude of the people of the United States. May God bless you all.
President Bush concluding his remarks at the Johnson Space Center in Houston. The memorial for the seven astronauts whose lives were lost aboard the Columbia Space Shuttle on Saturday. And now we should hear the tolling of the bells.
Words of open faith. the 23rd Psalm. Adonai ro'i lo echsar b'na'ot desha yar bitzeni, almei menuchot yenachaleni, nafshi yeshovev, yancheni b'magle tzedek l'ma'an shemo.
This is Naval Chaplain Rabbi Harold Robinson.
I shall not want. He leads me beside still waters. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake.
Gam ki elech begei tzel mavet, lo ira ra, ki ata imadi, shivtecha, umishantecha, hema yenachemuni.
Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. For you are with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me.
Ta'aroch lefanai shulchan neged tzorarai, deshanta b'shemen aroshi kosi revaya. Ach tov v'chesed yardifuni kol yemei chayai, v'shavti b'veit Adonai, lo'orech yamim.
You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. I invite you to join me as we pray together. Eternal Father, strong to save, thank you for honoring us with your presence at this ceremony of remembrance. To know you in times of joy and success is a wonderful blessing for which we are truly grateful. Yet to experience you in times of tragedy and sorrow, to experience you when everything goes wrong and all our best efforts are not enough, to experience you then is to us life and our only reliable hope. Thank you, O God, for having been with us through the past four difficult days. We thank you in advance for your presence with us in your future. But, O God, it is your presence with us now that enables us to persevere when we think we no longer can. We lift before you these seven families, as well as the NASA family, for whom this loss is personal and intense. Please lead them through the valley of the shadow of death. Where there is sorrow, we pray for your comfort. Where there is loneliness, we ask for a reassuring sense of your presence. Where the great questions beg for answers, grant your wisdom, and where it seems the ability to face the next day is no longer there, grant your guidance and the strength to finish well. Dear God, we pray also for ourselves as a nation. May we not only mourn the loss of our valiant crew, may we also be inspired by their lives of purpose and accomplishment. From America or India or Israel or any other place where people live in freedom, raise up among us some boy or girl, some college student who will catch the vision and dedicate themselves to the disciplines necessary for excellence. Help them see in these our heroes the qualities against which to pattern their lives and then explore, probe, experiment, and in so doing, catch a further glimpse of you through the wonder of your creation. As we depart this place, we pray now your blessings upon these families, the NASA community, and upon our great nation. God bless America. Amen.
final benediction at the memorial service for the seven astronauts who died on Saturday in the skies over Texas, returning to Earth aboard the Columbia shuttle. As they were memorialized today, astronauts not just from Wisconsin and Washington State and Virginia, but from Tel Aviv and Kerala, India. President Bush noted that astronaut Kalpana Chawla aboard the space shuttle could look down and see the entire length and breadth of her native land. Now we should hear the tolling of bells. A naval petty officer will ring the bell. Standing by as a naval petty officer approaches the bell that's going to be rung at the memorial service for the... The bell is rung in memoriam for people who were lost at sea. In this case, of course, the sea of space. As President Kennedy observed, space is the sea on which he believes Americans must sail. Seems to be a single T-38 training fighter flying overhead, dipping its wings as it soared over the Johnson Space Center in Houston. At the conclusion of the memorial service for the seven astronauts who were lost aboard the Columbia space shuttle on Saturday, Rick Husband, Willie McCool, Dave Brown, Kalpana Chawla, Michael Anderson, Ilan Ramon, and Laurel Clark. President Bush and Mrs. Bush are leaving the memorial. Scott Simon here, and as the recessional continues and people file out, we will note that we can see President and Mrs. Bush, we could see Minority Leader Senator Tom Daschle, John Glenn, in many ways the most eminent figure in the space community, first American in orbit, later of course a member of the U.S. Senate for many years, now retired. I'm joined by Dan Shore and Ira Flato up in New York. And Dan, President Bush, towards the end of his remarks, was struggling with his emotions. I noticed you turned to me and you noticed something in his remarks that I don't think would be inappropriate to note right now when he pledged the further prosperity of the exploration of space.
Well, that's right. He quoted Captain David Brown as saying that the American space program will go on, and the president also said that the American space program will go on in the way that they kind of echoed the words of President Reagan in 1986, who said, "Man will continue his conquest of space to reach out for new goals and ever greater achievements. That's the way we shall commemorate our seventh challenger heroes." That was President Reagan then, in similar tones today. But when the president says that the space program will go on, it is interesting that he doesn't say, nor did any of the persons who spoke today say, that the shuttle program will go on. Mm-hmm. Because the shuttle program is the one in which now 14 have lost their lives, which is a lot more than all of the people who lost their lives in any in all of the space program together, which was three on an Apollo flight, which burned and killed three of its people. So this may not be the time for looking ahead to the politics of this, but I suspect that the space shuttle program, which Greg Easterbrook in Time magazine this week says must be stopped because it's costly, outmoded, impractical, and deadly, I think that we may have a review of the space program.
And there will certainly be voices on the other side. Taking a look at the recessional as people are leaving now, you're struck certainly by looking at the number of children squirming around on the seats and sitting in their mother's laps. During President Bush's remarks, the seven people on board the space shuttle were fathers and mothers to a collection of 12 children. This is not a space program that anymore is a collection of fighter jocks, but family men and women. And Kent Rominger, the chief of the astronaut office, remembered them not just as fathers and mothers, and for that matter, scientists and pilots, but jokesters and pranksters and friends around the office.
I believe, by the way, that this was President Bush's first ever visit to the Johnson Space Center. It seemed almost impossible that as governor of Texas he had not visited it, but apparently he had no occasion to.
Well, and a very sad occasion, of course, today. Ira Flatow, in the seconds that we have dwindling down now, let me ask you, it seemed clearly that Sean O'Keefe, the head of NASA, said that he considered it a personal mission, in a sense of fulfillment of NASA's mission to determine what happened on Saturday to the Columbia.
I'm sure they will have to determine this and determine how quickly they can correct it. So, because they have to decide what to do with the future of the shuttle. As Dan said, is there a future for the shuttle? And if not, what shape is the future of manned spaceflight for the United States?
This morning, we will note crews are working to excavate the shuttle Columbia's nose cone from a hole in East Texas, a town called Hemp Hill, Texas, where officials say that the hole that was left on impact of the nose cone is about 20 feet wide. National Public Radio will continue to cover the aftermath of the loss of the space shuttle Columbia for the rest of the day. For many stations, that coverage is going to be continuing after the first part of the hour. Scott Simon and Dan Shore in Washington, Ira Flatow in New York, we have been here to bring you National Public Radio's live special coverage of the memorial service at the Johnson Space Center in Houston, Texas, for the seven astronauts that were lost aboard the Columbia space shuttle on Saturday: Rick Husband, Willie McCool, Dave Brown, Kalpana Chawla from India, Michael Anderson, Ilan Ramon from Israel, and Laurel Clark. I'm Scott Simon in Washington. You're listening to live special coverage. This is NPR News.